Ehrlich, not only to listen, but also to speak out. And as I told in the chapel, for me personally and for the Ukrainian Catholic Church, Chapitsky Institute is very important institution for many reasons. First of all, because this is the unique center of the entire theological education of our church in North America, in the English-speaking world. In our right now, we desperately need to transmit the richness of our tradition into many languages and many cultures. When I was bishop in Argentina, I was a liaison between our church and Spanish-speaking world. But Chapitsky Institute is doing an outstanding job in order to share our heritage in the English and French-speaking world as well. Secondly, this is the unique theological institution who studies the heritage of the Metropolitan Institutes. In our church, professors like Father Andrew Czarowski and Peter Galata, they are those persons who know almost everything about Chapitsky, almost more than anybody else in our church. And I think that his personality, not the old Andrew, is a crucial one, because he created the face of our church in the modern world, in the modern society. And when we are going into the new culture, new world, it is so important to rediscover for us those, I would say, pillars of our own identity. And third, I mentioned today in the chapel about the spirituality. We live today in the secularized world. I had a chance yesterday to see a huge manifestation of March for Life at the Canadian Parliament. It means that really today we have to proclaim a good news in that secularized society. To live the joy of gospel according to the words of Pope Francis. To perform a new evangelization according to the words of Pope Benedict. But I think that we have to think about the next 10 or 20 years. Because today we live in the secular society, tomorrow we will live in the post-secular society. As perhaps Metropolitan Andrew Chapitsky lived in the modern world, and after a few years after his death, became post-modern. And he could be a good teacher for us how we can be well prepared for the post-secular society. Why? Because a human being is always the same in each period of his history. And human being is a spiritual one. We are incarnated spirits. And we cannot deny that our own spiritual identity. Even if today, in that secularized world, there are some tendency to forget about something spiritual, about absolute, about God. That hunger and thirst for God tomorrow will rise up. And we are supposed to be prepared to deliver the nourishment to the more post-secular society tomorrow. And I think this is exactly a challenge for the church today, a challenge for our theological institution. And I think this is very important task for the Metropolitan Edward Bishop Institute, and for you as theologians as well. Because tomorrow people will ask you to help them to find God. And you have to be quite aware of your responsibility. Because studying at the Sapiecki Institute, you know too much. Too much for those who have no possibility to study Christian theology and spirituality. And you will be really important persons tomorrow. That's it.
So, Cyril, you have a question? Yes, please, Cyril.
So, yesterday, one of the children asked you about the name of our church, the word Ukrainian, in our church, and whether that might be an obstacle to people coming in. And part of your answer was that we should honor our roots. So, as a sort of an addition question to that, you were at this service, we sang in Greek with Byzantine chants. You come here other times, we sing Melkite chants. Our roots, if they are with Caleb, I feel that so many of us have been grafted onto so many other Eastern Christian, and to be honest, Western Christian trees, because, well, I don't think we've been hybridized, but just, again, to stick to the liturgy, we sing Western hymns often. And so for many people, I don't know actually how many other people I speak on behalf of, but at least for myself, I like to think of our church as more and more cosmopolitan and less sort of married to one specific context. So with that in mind, then almost the word Ukrainian makes less and less sense. As we sing more chant, as we learn more theologians, as we celebrate the saints of other churches, and it becomes a sign of, not exactly a contradiction, but I wonder if you can speak to that.
Oh, it's a profound and good question. We not to have only honor our roots. This is not a matter of veneration, but this is a matter of finding the sprinkling water. This is something which gives us a life. When a tree has the roots, it means the tree can be alive only if those roots are alive. Because through those roots, tree is receiving nourishment. The same for us. We not just not honor our roots, we have to rediscover our roots in order to receive a vital power from them. This is maybe can be a good image of the church tradition. Yesterday I answered that question in that way. Roman Catholic Church. They would never throw away word Roman. Even if there is German, Roman Catholic Church, Polish, Lithuanian, and otherwise. The same for us. Church tradition is always incarnated into the spiritual experience of some society or even culture. Christian life always proclaims the incarnated word. It is why we as the Ukrainian church, we are supposed to share our roots, not only know them, rediscover them by ourselves, but to make them a source of our life for tomorrow. Which is why I feel comfortable with the word Ukrainian. Because in this way we can share
our experience that we have for 1,000 years of Christianity. Not on honoring, you know, but really be vibrant with those roots.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure, let me ask you.
Okay, go ahead, Harold.
Just add to that. As someone who understands Cyril's question, but actually is less interested in the sort of the multi-expressive Byzantine experience, I'm very happy as a non-Ukrainian coming into the Ukrainian Catholic Church. I was baptized here in the parish many years ago by Father Peter, no less. I'm happy to work, as you say, with those roots, with the Slavic Ukrainian roots, with the music, with everything else. Yes, it's nice to have, as my good friend Brian over there would say, to have all this other stuff. But I'm happy, and my family is quite happy, just to keep it simple at times, and use what we have. But nonetheless, I'm not Ukrainian, as many people here in Canada who are part of the church are not. So when you raise my kids, talk to me, and one of my kids is probably a budding theologian, talking to me about this. When the term Roman was brought up, I agree with you completely. I wouldn't suggest for a second that they change their thing. But there's a big difference between the word Roman and the word Ukrainian, because the word Roman is tied to a city, the see of the Pope. If the church were called the Italian Catholic Church, then we would have a problem. The Roman Catholics or the Italian Catholics would have a problem. And yes, it's centered in Rome, which is in Italy, and you know, for the longest time, most of the cardinals were Italian, and there were strong kind of Italian connections. But that church, the Roman Catholic Church, has reached a point now, in most people's minds, of being a church for everyone, even if it nonetheless recognizes its roots, it uses Latin. I mean, I sent my kids to a school where they learn Latin, despite the fact that I'm part of the Ukrainian Catholic Church. Those kind of roots are there, and they need to be maintained. Learning the Gregorian chant, I would love to see that more in the Roman Catholic Church, all those kind of things. But the label Roman opens itself to a wider understanding. So, I mean, I, as an Eastern Christian in communion with Rome, can confuse somebody by when they ask me, I'll say, I'm a Kievan Orthodox in communion with Rome. What is that? I don't say that as a general rule because I don't want to confuse people. But the point of saying that is to highlight what is essential, which is that I'm an Eastern Christian. I'm not a Roman Catholic. I'm an Eastern Christian. But I'm also one, as an Eastern Christian, was part of a church that is centered in Kiev, and I respect that. I would never want any change in that. But as a church centered in Kiev, I see it as a church centered in Kiev that can speak to the world with its tradition. And using the term Kievan Catholic is what I would love to be able to use without confusing people, would be my way of saying I honor these roots, I want to respect these roots, I want to grow out of these roots, but I want this tree to grow. I want it to go everywhere. I want these branches to go throughout the world. And I see that is the challenge for not only the Ukrainian Catholic Church, but for any of the ethnic Eastern churches. And I'm struck, for example, by the fact that the Antiochian Orthodox, of any community in, say, the States, other than the OCA, the Orthodox Church in America, the one that I sense has the greatest success are the Antiochians. I think in part, another factor certainly, but their name isn't Syrian or Lebanese or Turkish or whatever. It's Antioch, which is, you know, now a dead city for all intents and purposes. But it's a label that does not immediately have people centered on an ethnic designation. And so that's where I hope with time the church could see a way to find its roots, but also maintain those roots, but also find a way to allow itself to go beyond that. So I don't know if you can speak.
Maybe one day we'll have a united Kievan church.
Yeah, well, that would help, yes.
And maybe one day, because for those, I would say, desirable event, we will redefine the name of the Ukrainian Catholic Church, but other churches also. So we are not closed to some specific terms. In all different culture and historical periods, we have to find an appropriate name to explain who we are. But also we have to be careful not to confuse more people, but to be more understandable. And I hope that in the future, the word Ukrainian would not refer to the ethnical closed community. But Ukrainian Catholic Church would be, well, accepted and understandable as a church who is open to everybody. This is my hope also. I have now a magic, you know, words to check everything. It would be discussed to think about it.
Yeah. Tom.
So yesterday, Pope Francis met with Pope Tawadros of the Coptic Orthodox Church, and Pope Tawadros brought up the common celebration of Easter, which I think here, especially in Canada, where we're dealing with, you know, we have Western Christians and many Ukrainian Catholics who celebrate on the Gregorian calendar, and the Ukrainian Catholics and Orthodox Christians celebrate on the Julian calendar, and this always becomes a question of which way are we supposed to go. You know, for example, in the Middle East now, Latin Christians follow the Orthodox, the Julian calendar calculation so that they can celebrate together as Christians. And I guess my question is there any chance or hope within our church, in the Ukrainian Catholic Church, to find a common celebration of Easter to especially here in Canada, so that we can celebrate together with Western Christians and with our Orthodox brethren, because it kind of gets confusing when you're, you know, especially when it's 5 weeks apart and some people start celebrating the first one and then at the end they celebrate the second one and then go back to this calendar, and so it's, could you speak to that, to a common celebration of Easter?
Well, whole issue of calendar, according to my mind, is an issue of Christian unity. And because there is a lack of unity, not only between the churches, but inside of the one church itself, we have such problems. And any new changes will provoke new separations and new conflicts. It is why we are so sensitive to provoke any other divisions. Of course, desire is be united, not only in our faith, but also in our celebrations of our faith, as it was in the first millennium. But if you probably know, the whole issue of Pascha was so important question in the first 2 or 3 centuries. And for the moment, we are trying to look at it, that perspective, from the pastoral point of view, not an ideological one. And I hope that one day we will have the unity inside of our communities, because we have some parishes in our church that they have two communities.
We've never heard of that.
And I think this is crazy. But very often calendar is becoming some sort of ideology. So it is why we have to be sensitive to not provoke any further divisions, but to try to keep the unity. Because calendar is not a matter of faith. It's a matter of the church discipline. But it's not so easy for the Christian to be disciplined.
Yes. Keeping in the theme of church unity, there is now in Ukraine 3 Orthodox churches in addition to the Greek Catholic Church. And there are many who say that Ukraine should be united under one church and one patriarch. Do you think that's possible? And if that is possible, what would the relationship be between this one Eastern Rite church and Rome?
Good question. Our church has its own ecumenical perspective, our point of view, how to reach toward the Christian unity. a big scandal in Ukraine for the Orthodox themselves to have three churches who are without intercommunion with them, even if they are Ukrainian and Orthodox. Right now, in Toronto, there is an important conference in which the representatives of those three churches and the fourth one, Orthodox Church in Canada, which is the other fraction, they are studying and seeking a way how to be united. So I think first step toward Christian unity in Ukraine is the unity among the Orthodox. Mm-hmm. Because for us, it's getting very difficult to open serious and efficient dialogue about the unity with only one faction of the Orthodox community. And we are praying and we're trying to help our Orthodox brethren to be united among themselves. The next step, my predecessor, Bulgin Husar, when he moved the see of the head of our church from Lviv to Kyiv, he did an appeal and also he did some proposal how to reach the unity between Orthodox part and Greek Catholic part of the former one Kievan church. He's proposing, first of all, to reach the intercommunion. Not one structure immediately, but to be able to celebrate a liturgy at the same altar. This is the desire even of the Holy Father. Not canonical unity, not structural unity, but sacramental unity. This is a difficult task because Eucharist is not a tool for the unity, but a means to reach the unity, or the highest expression of the unity. It is why point that we are trying to reach is to rediscover the way how we can renew the communion with our Orthodox brethren. It is why I was so eager to re-establish Kievan study group. Maybe we'll finally renew that experience. Last year I visited His Holiness Patriarch Bartholomew in Istanbul, and we discussed the issue. Because exactly, Kievan study group was trying to find those possibilities how to renew the communion with the See of Constantinople for us. And your question was, well, but what is the place of the Pope of Rome would be? We are well aware that we cannot reach that communion with the Orthodox world without the movement of the whole Catholic Church. And the image of that church communion worldwide is the undivided church in the first millennium, where Pope of Rome, he presides communion. He's one who is promoting that universal communion among the churches. So our intercommunion with the Orthodox world should not undermine our communion with See of Rome, as it was in the time of the St. Prince's blood Volodymyr, when Ukraine was baptized, when the Kievan church was born. So this is the three steps, I would say, of our ecumenical program. how are we supposed to reach that unity? Is it an easy task?
Not at all.
Is it possible? According to the human possibilities, not. But church is not a human institution. It's the body of Christ. And I have to share with you my positive impressions. Last year, Cardinal Kutkov visited Ukraine. And he is a president of the Pontifical Council for the Christian Unity. And we had such a conference on ecumenism in Kyiv, a round table. That issue raises a very important interest and movement in Ukraine among the intellectuals and simple people. So there is a demand for the Christian unity in Ukraine from the people. And especially that, I would say, very difficult period of our country. Both Catholic and Orthodox and Protestants, we are acting as one body. So we are united in action, especially in action against hatred, against war, action which is proclaiming peace as a unique way how to create a space for the social discussion and social development. In those days, we are preparing an appeal about the upcoming presidential elections in Ukraine. So we are united in our actions, and people demand that unity. So maybe one day we'll be in communion, not only in our human deeds and words, but also our spiritual and sacramental life.
I was wondering, kind of related to that, when you said the whole Catholic Church has to move together as far as you as a Catholic Church within the Catholic Union moving together with our brothers of the same rite, that the whole Catholic Church has to move together. And I've been very encouraged by the progress made in the official Orthodox Catholic International Dialogue, where with the 2007 Ravenna document particularly, that a wonderful progress was made on the basis of new terminology rooted in the common tradition of, that both sides could agree to. Which was basically recognizing that, oh, there's always been church communion at three levels, the local, the regional, and the universal, and there's always been a protos, Greek for first or chief, at each level, such that the local bishop is the protos of all the ordained clergy at the local level, the patriarch is the protos of all the bishops at the regional level, and then the pope is the protos of all the patriarchs at the universal level. And it seemed very, very, very fruitful way of looking at things, again, because these are all terms that both sides are familiar with. It's part of the common tradition. It's a new way of looking at it. And when you put it that way, then the Orthodox side was able to see, because, well, the Orthodox certainly know that the local bishop has to have more authority than the other clergy in order to perform his function. The patriarch has to have more authority than other bishops to perform his function. The Orthodox know that as well as anyone else. So it makes them more open to recognizing, oh yes, I guess maybe the kind of what came out of the 2007 Ravenna document is, I guess, the Orthodox side signed onto it, also recognizing, I guess we can see that the Pope as the protos at the universal level.
Is there a question? Is there a question?
Yeah, where it's coming is that I'm wondering how much, because unfortunately the Russian delegation absented themselves, not because of disagreeing with that determination that was made at Ravenna, but because of a not recognizing some of the other Orthodox members. So it was some of their inter-Orthodox problems, which is why they absented themselves. And then they, it was a wonderful thing to understand. Because the Russian, as the largest Orthodox body, they're not being quite so clear that they've kind of said we have no experience of trying to be at the universal level. It's been such a, you talked to Bartholomew recently, so it seems to me that there's been so much that's come. How much do you see that, you see the Russians not being as behind that statement that everybody else signed on as a problem?
To ask that question, Russians.
Well, because you're in a closer relation with...
But my opinion is, this is a big difference between Kievan Church and Moscovian Church. Why? Because Kievan Church has that anamnesis, church memory of the undivided Christianity.
Yeah. And Moscow didn't exist at the time.
And Moscow did not have, does not have that kind of the Christian memory, because that church was born many years after the schism. And that division created some sort of identity of the church. It is why it will be more easier to call that deeper memory of the first millennium in the memory of the Church of Constantinople, Church of Antioch, so-called ancient churches of former Pentarchia, Kievan Church. But for a Moscow Church, it will be the big challenge. And I ask you to pray for them. Because that separation and the closeness of the Orthodox communities in Russia, which would consider themselves as a pillar and unique expression of the real Orthodoxy. And you know how suspicious Russian monks are for the Greek world, who are real Orthodox. This is the question of their identity. It is why we have to pray for our Orthodox brethren, that they among themselves would have such a community. And I hope that maybe upcoming un-Orthodox synod in some question would help.
Well, I'm sorry, I was distracted. We have to finish right now. Unfortunately, we expect to do two things. First, we have to get a blessing from the patriarch, and then we want to stand for a group photo, and there's all this discussion, where's the best place? Does anybody think that a group photo here would be problematic? Okay, great. So, Vashe Blaženstvo, once again, Pluže, Pluže Srdečno. To receive the blessing from the
Beatitude. Благословен Господь на вас, благодатью чудовою, і завжди і повсякчас, і на віки вічні.
Амінь.
Now, can we all gather, and if we're going to make this one of those official type photos, so we want bishops.